This is what I call a moldy but goody.
All right, let's take that open.
HPPodcraft.com.
It's the material, said the old ship's doctor. The material plus the conditions, and maybe, he added slowly, a third factor.
Go on, doctor, we said encouragingly, and with more than a little expectancy. We were in the smoke room of the Sandelay, running across the North Atlantic, and the doctor was a character.
The material, he said with conviction, is inevitably the medium of expression, of the life force, the fulcrum, as it were, lacking which it is unable to exert itself, or, indeed, to express itself in any form or fashion that would be intelligible or evident to us. So potent is the share of the material and the production of that thing, which we name life, and so eager the life force to express itself, that I am convinced it would, if given the right conditions, make itself manifest, and even through so hopeless-seeming a medium as a simple block of sawn wood. For I tell you, gentlemen, the life force is both as fiercely urgent and as indiscriminate as fire, the destructor, yet which some are now growing to consider the very essence of life rampant. There is a quaint-seeming paradox there, he concluded, nodding his old gray head.
What is life? A question a child may ask, but not a childish question.
Well, it's an inquiry we're going to pursue on this week's story, The Derelict, by William Hope Hodgson.
Lovecraft was a fan of Hodgson, and that's why we're going to talk about him here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
We're here at HPPodcraft.com. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey.
This is what Lovecraft actually had to say about Hodgson in supernatural horror and literature. Of rather uneven stylistic quality, but vast occasional power in its suggestion of lurking worlds and beings behind the ordinary surface of life, is the work of William Hope Hodgson, known today far less than it deserves to be. Despite a tendency toward conventionally sentimental conceptions of the universe and of man's relation to it and his fellows, Mr. Hodgson is perhaps second only to Algernon Blackwood in his serious treatment of unreality. Few can equal him in adumbrating the nearness of nameless forces and monstrous besieging entities through casual hints and insignificant details, or in conveying feelings of the spectral and the abnormal in connection with regions or buildings. That's the man that we're going to be talking about today.
And I think this story is one of those stories. This is really got some super creepy, weird stuff in it.
Absolutely.
Hey, who was that reader that we had at the top of the show?
Why, that was once again Jeff C. Carter.
Jeff C. Carter!
Author and a fellow haunted house enthusiast. Jeff wanted me to let you know about a new collection of weird horror stories available from popular mythos writer and friend of the show, Ed M. Erdelak. It's called Angler in Darkness. It's out August 1st, and you can pre-order it now at Amazon.com. We'll link out to it in the show notes. Jeff, thank you once again for reading for us.
We've done quite a few of these William Hope Hodgson stories on our show.
Yeah.
But this one, when I started reading it, I thought that we might have actually covered it before, but it isn't the story that I thought it was.
Yeah, I felt a little tingle of recognition as well, but that was another story we covered. This may become obvious to listeners as we go along with that story.
Right.
What that story is. But by Hodgson, we've covered House on the Borderland, that book, which when I think about it, that's like a fever dream I had, because we spent a few weeks on that and there were like pigmen and lots of
crazy.
There was time traveling, which is a topic we'll get into again pretty soon on this
show. Sure,
And of course, the Carnacki stories.
Yeah.
Carnacki, the wonderfully competent ghost finder. You guys have, you got a kind of Carnacki deal coming up soon, right? Something that's along those lines.
Coming up soon? Try right now. It's happening.
It's coming up now?
It's up. It's called The Adventures of Quiet and Bold Consultants Paraordinary. It's myself and Greg Johnson. We are paranormal investigators. Greg's character is called Dr. Silence, and my character is Randolph Dexter Bold. His is a man of science, and mine is a man of mysticism, and together we solve supernatural mysteries.
And this is a radio drama.
It is a radio, I don't know if I'd say drama or comedy, really. It's a comedy. It's supposed to be a comedy. That's in quotes.
But it's something to be listened to.
It's something to be listened to. You can check it out at quietandbold.com. It also features the voice talents of my wife, Rachel Lackey, and your wife, Heather Klinke.
That's at quietandbold.com. I hope people will tune in.
Me too. But I want to bring up that our ransom for Andrew Levin's reading of The Whisper in Darkness, we have over half of our money. Over half of our money as the time of this recording.
But we haven't hit the target yet, so please go to hppodcraft.com, hit that donate button on the right side of the site. You can buy your ticket to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast live show at Necronomicon. That's $15. You can get audio of that show for $5. There are a few other rewards there. If none of that's appealing to you, you can go to the bottom of that page, click donate, and give us any amount you want to get The Whisper in Darkness read by Andrew Lehman, given the full H.P. Podcraft treatment in your ears, if we can hit that goal. So please go donate. All right, enough of all that. Let's get to the story. Now, this story that we're covering today was suggested by listener Eric Sroka.
Eric!
Yes, Eric. He's always great at suggesting new pieces of fiction for us to look at. Thank you, Eric. Post-Frankenstein, we've been flirting around with all sorts of weird science, and we'll continue to do so for a bit, transitioning into some more obvious science fiction. But this story approaches a different yet related theme, which is the nature of life.
And the story starts off with the doctor talking about this topic. What is something that is alive? How do you define life?
And he's saying that life requires some kind of matter or material to manifest itself through, and then the proper conditions for that to work. There may be another element, something spiritual maybe, but the doctor is really just laying down that life needs matter and the right conditions, which isn't really that revolutionary of an idea.
No.
At all. But I think what he's really reaching for in this section is this idea that life is like flame or electricity. It's this primal force that wants to manifest. And if the conditions were right, it would even manifest itself through a block of wood.
Right.
You know, it needs matter, but the matter almost doesn't matter as long as the conditions are correct. He says, fire, electricity, and life, nothing we can do will create any one of them. Our power is merely to be able, by providing the conditions, to make each one of them manifest to our physical senses.
He seems like he's saying that life is actually an energy form, or kind of a,
right.
You know, how like fire is a combination of many things.
Yes, and it can be conducted through some sort of material. Now, the narrator doesn't quite buy this. He thinks that life is something more mysterious. He says fire and electricity, those are natural forces. And also, if there's matter required for life, it eliminates the possibility of an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor shuts him down. He says, look, keep that up and I'll ask you to explain the spiritual mystery of a crab. Meaning, you're thinking of life narrowly as something that, like, belongs to humans.
Right.
But you're probably not thinking about the sacred mysteries of life while you're grubbing up on some crab legs at Red Lobster.
You know? Yeah.
You're not so precious about life when it comes to these other creatures. And also, he says, what do you have against material life after death? I guess meaning, don't just assume we float around as immaterial consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
There may be life after death, but that could still be conveyed materially, which makes me think of those Carnacki stories.
Yes.
You have ectoplasm and things like that. The thing about this opening is it sounds like a really profound discussion, but it kind of isn't.
It's not.
No, it just sounds that way. The story never actually gets to define or even comes close to defining what the nature of life is.
No, not at all.
It poses the question, but the doctor even says it. He says, the thing I'm going to tell you won't explain the mystery of life, but only give you one of my pegs on which I hang my feeling that life is, as I have said, a force made manifest through conditions, that is to say, natural chemistry, and that it can take for its purpose and need the most incredible and likely matter. For without matter, it cannot come into existence. So a little repetitive and never gets to the mysteries of life. It's basically evolutionary science that he's talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, all he's saying is that there are some weird life forms out there that evolve to meet conditions. And I agree with that. I was just looking the other day at a picture of a Cyclops shark.
And, what?
Who needs that, you know? Yet it lives. And so I support his theory.
This whole discussion gets the old doc to tell his tale, a tale from his past when he worked on a ship. As a doctor. The good doctor worked on a sailing passenger clipper on its way to China.
And this is right after he's passed his examinations when he was young, right out of medical school. And this trip is supposed to be somewhat relaxing for him since he's been under so much stress. And I don't know how relaxing this would be, though, because he actually took a position on the ship. And I watched a lot of The Love Boat when I was a kid, and the ship's doctor was in every episode. Every single one. You know, when you go out to sea, chances are good you're going to get a little lovesick. Yeah. Keeps a ship's doctor very busy.
Didn't the ship's doctor have like a little cocktail bar in his office that he was always like making drinks and having cocktails?
Yeah, he liked to have a little drink before he had to do some operating.
The captain of the vessel was this fella, Gannington. He was a salty, tough old dog.
But illiterate. This is a fact that isn't really that important to the story, so I think the doctor's just kind of being mean to mention it, something he makes very clear.
The first mate was Mr. Burleys, who was a reserved but well-read guy. And the second mate was this fella, Slevrin, who was very intelligent, but also a little sensitive and not so stable emotionally. So after the stop off of Madagascar, they hit a storm that gave them a good toss and about. They took some water on, and two of the rowboats were lost, as well as one of their pigsties went overboard, and three of their pigs went with it. The storm subsides just after nightfall and everyone is making repairs. The second mate, Slevrin, points out to the doctor that there's a ship about 2 miles out, and it looks like an old sailing vessel. Slevrin says, looking through his telescope, that it's a derelict, old as the hills, covered in salt incrustations, and all of its rigging has rotted away. So the doc brings up going over to the ship and checking it out, and the captain says, sure, when the work's done. So they finish up the work, and the captain decides he's going to get one of their boats, you know, one of the rowboats, the smaller boats, over there. So it's the captain, the second mate, the doc, and six other guys. Or is it six guys including them?
I'm not sure, but it's, you know, it's your typical Star Trek expedition part, basically.
It is.
Captain, the doctor.
As they go to the ship, the sun is setting, giving everything a very red-orange hue.
This investigating a derelict thing is kind of a trope.
Oh, yeah? Heck yeah.
You know, in Star Trek, obviously, it happens quite a bit, but all over the place in different films and literature. On TVtropes.org, they simply call it ghost ship. And I thought the description of the trope was funny. It said, the main characters receive a distress call or randomly come across a seemingly deserted vehicle and have to figure out what happened and where everybody went. Usually they run across exactly what happened when it tries to eat them.
As they approach the ship, they go into this brown algae goo stuff that's floating in the water.
Right. It's a sort of, what he says, a curious scum that's around the boat. And that's a wonderful and horrific word, scum.
It stretches out from the derelict hundreds of yards in a very irregular pattern. The captain speculates that something went off, a foodstuff of some kind, and the mold grew out from the ship. And the ship is covered in dirty white mold streaked with purple veins. Off of the ship, there's a misty haze surrounding the derelict to what the captain cites as spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, they'll have to watch out not to get all blowed up when they go up there and look through her hatches in case there's some kind of trapped air that would explode or something. I don't know how those things work. But he also speculates that maybe somebody is aboard, still surviving somehow, and the mist might be some evidence of that, perhaps.
They move into the brown scum, and as they get closer to the ship, it gets thicker and thicker. And this made me think a bit of the island muck from the Dagon story, Lovecraft's Dagon story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He says, as we went, I was conscious of a peculiar smell. I could give no name to it, yet in a way it was vaguely familiar. This scum has its own scent, and I doubt it's favorable.
It takes a lot of effort to paddle through the muck, but they get to the ship as it's finally getting dark. The captain yells, ahoy, aboard there, but no reply. But now it's getting very dark.
Doctor's normally a pretty cool character, but he's feeling a little nervy.
This seems like just an insane idea. Like, what are they gonna get out of this? Messing with this stuff.
They don't know yet. It's not too dangerous yet, you know. This could just be some spillage from the ship. They don't know.
Near the ship, the second mate sees their lost pigsty right next to the derelict. They wonder how it managed to get so close to the ship through all of the muck.
Right. If it's so difficult for them to row through it, how could this pigsty have drifted that close to the ship? It's as if the scum brought it in.
As they get close to the derelict, the boat hook guy tries to hook the ship and then pull them in. But as he does, part of the ship tears away. And the captain tells him to try again, and he eventually finds a sturdier part. When that happened, I would have gone, okay, we shouldn't be climbing on this thing. This is a really bad idea. This is not structurally sound. But of course, the captain just says, we're going to do this. The captain grabs an oar, and then he has the second mate light some lanterns. He pushes the oar in the side of the ship, and it leaves an indentation on the derelict. Yeah. It's the mold. It's that deep that you can push it in and it leaves a mark. Again, I don't know what the hell they're doing messing with this thing.
Well, you know, I guess the underlying motivation is that there might be something of value here, either materially aboard the ship, some treasure.
Yeah.
But even just if it's a story of what this thing is or confirmation.
Sure.
Of maybe a ship that got lost at sea. So there's some rewards here. And these are pretty salty, strong guys who are used to the weirdness of the deep sea. So, you know, they're just not that put off by it yet.
I guess not. The captain, the second mate, another guy, and the doctor all go on board the ship. There was nothing but smooth, great masses and surfaces of dirty white colored mold.
There might have been no planking beneath the mold for all that our feet could feel.
Our tread was with a spongy pudding feel. The whole place is covered in mold, like crazy deep mold. It says the mold was so heavy as to entirely disguise what lay beneath, covering the deck fittings into indistinguishable mounds of mold, all dirty white and blotched and veined with irregular, dull, purplish markings. So the captain kicks the ground a bit to get a sense of it and says, "Blessed if there ain't a regular skin to it."
I don't like the notion at all that there's this mold with a thick skin on it. Ugh.
For some crazy reason, they touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it feels like dough. And the doctor says that the odor around the derelict smells like old house that's infested with mice.
And that's the smell that was familiar to him as they were approaching the derelict. And the doctor at this point stops the story and tells his colleagues, "By the way, I was raised by mice." And then he just turns around and gets back into this mold storm. No, that didn't happen.
They walk around the deck just looking at all the mold-covered stuff. And the captain points and says, "Guns! There are these things that are vaguely cannon-shaped." The captain thinks that this might have been a pirate ship, and that if this was a pirate ship, maybe it's got pirate treasure.
There you go. That's that treasure I was talking about.
Yeah.
It's very seductive. The Hebrew's something disgusting. The doctor says, "I remember that I found myself walking as lightly and gingerly as possible. Occasionally, the soft stuff would grip our heels, releasing them with a little sullen suck."
Yeah. They move towards the back of the derelict. Everybody is pretty creeped out, but the captain seems to be not that bothered. And just keeps everybody calm.
He calls it courage, but it's kind of a foolishness that he's exhibiting right now, I think.
I agree. The captain goes down some small steps, and there's this yucky fog that's hanging around the ship.
The doctor says, "Once an odd puff of it beat up suddenly from somewhere and caught me in the face, carrying a queer, sickly, heavy odor with it that somehow frightened me strangely with the suggestion of a waiting and half-comprehended danger." I'd lose, that's it for me. I'd lose my mind if there was a puff of anything in my face. I don't even care if it was like good smelling powder. If I didn't know where it came from, I would not be happy.
Yeah, that stuff can kill you. Molds are potentially lethal.
Yeah, and I don't know when this story that the doctor's telling takes place. I assume it's the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure that all the details of how mold can make one sick were known at that time.
Sure.
I mean, what details were known to science, I'm sure that anecdotally people knew.
Right.
You know, but there were cases all over in the early 1900s of people getting ill or dying in mold-related illnesses. And actually, it's construction materials that there might be more mold now than there ever was because of the, you know, plaster, the way that buildings are constructed now. It's just food for mold in a lot of places. But I look just a little into people's understanding of mold in history, and it seems like we've been dealing with this stuff for a long time. There's even a passage about the dangers of mold in Leviticus 14 in the Old Testament.
What?
"The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'When you enter the land of Canaan, which I am giving you as your possession, and I put a spreading mold in the house in that land, the owner of the house must go and tell the priest, I have seen something that looks like a defiling mold in my house. The priest is to order the house to be emptied before he goes in to examine the mold so that nothing in the house will be pronounced unclean. After this, the priest is to go in and inspect the house. If the mold is spread on the walls, the priest is to order that the contaminated stones be torn out and thrown into an unclean place outside the town,' etc." It goes into more detail about doing a second check on it. It's got like a whole system of how to get this mold out of your house. But that's weird because right in the beginning, it seems like God is doing some kind of extremely dangerous and pointless scavenger hunt because it says the Lord told Moses and Aaron when you go to the land, it just so happens I put a spreading mold in a house. You have to go through all the. Why is he doing this to him? He's even telling him that he did it. Well, regardless, it seems like it's something that mankind has been struggling with for a long time.
They see something strange while they're on the derelict, like these bugs that look like sea lice, but they're huge. Now, sea lice is usually really, really tiny, but these are beetle-sized.
Yeah, normally you would have seen these, he says, you know, maybe on a live cod or on a fish, you'd see larger ones. But these are parasites that are on fish, and here they've apparently had such a source of food on this mold that they're just enormous. I don't like it.
Then they see a giant version of one of these. I mean, it's huge. It's like a foot long. And then it just disappears from them. But what it was is it like jumped. It jumped so quickly that they didn't even really see it jump. It just looked like it was gone.
"Jumped," said the captain. "Well, if that ain't a giant of all the sea lice I've ever seen, I guess it jumped 20 foot clear."
Wow.
What?
They come to this mound that is about 3 feet high and a few feet across. The cap says, "I reckon this is the scuttle." The captain thinks that this is where they need to get into. So he starts kicking this mound. And when he kicks it, his foot goes in, it caves, and this purple fluid comes out and it stinks. He's about to kick it again. The second mate says, "Stop."
He's ignored at first because nobody else can really hear what it is that he's hearing.
So the captain says, "Look, if we don't get below and clear this stuff out of the way, we're not going to get anything. If there's treasure here, it's going to be here." But the second mate insists that he hears this thumping sound. And the captain dismisses it and gets back to his kicking. And then as he does, the mound kind of goes flat and this purple liquid just keeps pouring out of it past the size of the actual mound.
I guess maybe this is why the doctor mentioned the captain being illiterate, actually, because he's clearly never read any kind of horror story ever. But also, he's not very imaginative. You know, he just sees this stuff as stuff, however weird. It's mold. He just wants to cut through it, get to the goodies, whatever they may be. It doesn't scare him because it still seems, you know, this could possibly be natural. But his kicking reveals that there's no real wood under there anymore.
Yeah.
It's gone squishy all through, he said. There's no scuttle there. There's no bally woodwork inside that lot. Ugh, what a rum smell.
Rum smell. The second mate finally is like, guys, listen.
And then we all heard it. A kind of dull, soft thud, 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 thud somewhere in the hull under us. Yet so vague as to make me half doubtful I heard it. Only that the others did so too.
Now this white mound is just pumping out this purple liquid. The other guy, the red shirt, the unnamed fella, he grabs one of the lanterns and he just runs.
Yeah, that purple fluid got on his boots and trousers. That was enough for him. He's got space madness now. If he had a few more minutes, he'd be ranting about how the mold has evolved far beyond humanity, far beyond our wildest dreams. And then he'd destroy their life raft for some reason. We have to stay here and become its servants. But he doesn't have enough time to do all that. The mold has other plans. Much more of a red shirt, as you say. He zigzagged as he ran, the lantern swaying in wild circles as he wrenched his feet free with a constant plop, plop.
The captain yells at him to come back with a lamp, but this guy is just gone. Yeah. And the captain's sort of confused by his insubordination, you know, because he's just like, why is he not listening to me? What the hell's going on? But the stunning, it continues. And then he asks the doc what he thinks about all this stuff. And the doc is just like, man, this is way out of my wheelhouse. I have no idea what the hell's going on here. The second mate screams, look! And he points at the mound. It quivers and it ripples. And as it does, it ripples all of the mold around the ship. Everything is moving, like all the surfaces are moving. The second mate grabs the captain by the wrist and says, the boat, sir, for God's sake.
But he never finished. For a tremendous hoarse scream cut off his words. They hove themselves round and looked. I could see without turning. The man who had run from us was standing in the waist of the ship, about a fathom from the starboard bulwarks. He was swaying from side to side and screaming in a dreadful fashion. He appeared to be trying to lift his feet, and the light from his swaying lantern showed an almost incredible sight. All about him, the mold was in active movement. His feet had sunk out of sight. The stuff appeared to be lapping at his legs, and abruptly, his bare flesh showed. The hideous stuff had rent his trouser leg away as if it were paper. He gave out a simply sickening scream, and with a vast effort, wrenched one leg free. It was partly destroyed. In the next instant, he pitched face downward, and the stuff heaped itself upon him, as if it were actually alive, with a dreadful, severe life. It was simply infernal. The man had gone from sight. Where he had fallen was now a writhing, elongated mound, in constant and horrible increase, as the mold appeared to move towards it in strange ripples from all sides.
Oh boy,
that is yucky. And everyone just stands there and watches in total horror. They hear the guys in the rowboat that's off of the ship, you know, yelling like, what the hell's going on? And they're calling to them. And he says, for strangely enough, the lamp standing upright and unharmed on the deck. So this is the lamp that the
red shirt was carrying.
Yeah, it just went down on the ground and it just stayed on the mold. It didn't tip over or fall over anything. It's just there. But it's moving, it's undulating kind of up and down, like it's almost a mini ocean that it's sitting on this deck. So it's very, very creepy. And just as all this craziness is going on, the doc's boot gets stuck. And as it gets stuck, it gets sucked in and squeezed a bit to the point that it actually hurts him. Captain's freaked out, but manages to yell to the men in the boat to come around where they are. They're able to pull his foot out, either ripping the boots or the trousers. He doesn't know what's going on. Everything's just chaos.
He tore his feet free, something ripping as he did so. I hope it was his trousers.
The second mate, he gets stuck and freaks out a bit.
It's got a hold of my feet! It's got a hold of my feet! He screamed. His feet had disappeared up to his boot tops.
But the captain grabs him and he pulls him with all of his sea dog strength, leaving the second mate's shoes behind. So now that the captain's carrying the second mate like a sack of potatoes over his shoulder because he's fainted.
Says the mate's long legs flogged limp and helpless against the captain's massive knees as he ran. I saw with the queer, unconscious noting of minor details how the torn soles of the second mate's boots flapped and jigged as the captain staggered aft. So it looks like some of the boots came with him, but they're all ripped up and, you know, something was trying to get in there.
They run to the back of the derelict. They can see the mold is rippling all over the ship, but not where they're standing. The guys are moving too slow to get to them because the muck is so thick and things look really bad and the thudding is growing louder and louder. And they just have to stand there and wait for the boat.
Yeah, or they could jump into the filthy scum.
Woo!
Which I don't know about. I think they consider, but then they think, no. The doctor says, I seem to feel the whole hull of the derelict beginning to quiver and thrill with each dull beat, and to me, with the gruesome and hideous suspicion of what made that noise. It was at once the most dreadful, incredible sound I have ever heard. Once he kicked at the thing that should go into the hull, I mean, it was as if he kicked at an organ or something, and that's why all the purplish stuff ran out. That's when it started to ripple, and the sound became bigger. And now we get this, where there are ugly purple veinings on it. And as it swelled, it seemed to me that the veinings and mottlings on it were becoming plainer, rising as though embossed upon it, like you will see the veins stand out on the body of a powerful, full-blooded horse. So yeah, the purple markings are actually veins within the surface of this mold.
Yeah, so this mold is behaving more like a large organism.
Yeah.
You know, with blood vessels and a heart. The captain tries to wake up the second mate, and then he comes to a bit. He starts screaming about his feet and the pain that he's in, and the captain gives him over to the dock to hold him, and then he runs over to yell at the guys in the boat to, you know, move their asses. Then a big old wave of mound just moves right towards the captain. The doc yells at him to get out of the way.
Even as I shouted, the mold near to him gave a sudden, peculiar slobber. So this thing strikes out and misses him.
The captain manages to dodge out of the way and make it back to them. As the captain takes the second mate again from the doctor notices that there's actually an old boat just off to the side. And they think, well, we're screwed, so might as well give it a go. So they throw the second mate into the boat first. Good thinking.
See how it works out for him. He's unconscious.
He forcibly guides the doc over to the rail and into the boat as well, and the captain follows right behind him. Once in the boat, the cap lights a match because they don't have any lantern. As he lights it, he sees that the boat's in pretty good condition, and he guesses that it just got stuck in the muck, but it didn't really get hit with the mold like the derelict is. But inside the boat, there's a pile of bones, like three men's worth of bones, and they're all white and bleached. While they're looking at the bones, the thudding is getting louder and louder. The captain keeps lighting matches to see what's going on. He sees something as one of his matches goes out. Great lip of gray white was protruding in over the edge of the boat. A great lappet of the mold was coming stealthily towards us. A live mass of the very hull itself. And the captain goes, she's alive!
Oh boy.
And he goes, I never heard such a sound of comprehension and terror in a man's voice. The very horrified assurance of it made actual to me the thing that before had only lurked in my subconscious mind. I knew he was right. I knew that the explanation my reason and my training both repelled and reached towards was the true one. Basically, that this thing is a big, horrible monster.
Yeah.
This mold mass is moving towards them. They can see the other boat, the rest of the crew, coming around the edge of the derelict. And they're thinking, okay, they're really close now. We're going to get rescued.
It's all very tense. You know, the matches run out. They know that moldy tongue is coming toward them, but it's too dark to know where it is.
Yeah.
It's just getting closer and closer.
The captain yells for them to hand over an oar, and he reaches out into the darkness, finally getting hold of it. The boat they were on was tipped by an enormous weight.
Yeah, something starts almost capsizing it.
And the captain yells to the dock to duck. He drops, and then the captain swings his oar at something that was near him, and it's the mold. The captain is freaking fighting the mold with an oar.
He's fighting it with no visibility either. He's just swinging blindly in the dark, and his aim is true.
While he fights it off, they get the second mate and the doctor back onto the other boat, and they ask where the other guy is, and the captain yells, dead, pull, don't talk. They're still barely moving through this muck, and one of the guys starts freaking out, saying, it's got us, and the captain tells him, shut your mouth and pull. The thing seems to be getting closer, but again, they can't see it. It's dark, so the cap moves to the front of the ship, yells at the doc to help the men row. They're moving really slow, and the thing's on their heels, but it never seems to catch up. The captain yells that they're gaining. Finally, it gets easier and easier as they get out of the muck.
It's like they've just escaped a spider web of sorts.
Yeah. But as they are getting away, the captain notices a strong wind, a big storm is coming.
For a moment, it seems like the storm is going to keep them from getting back to their ship. This is the most scary part of the story, right? Is this escape. At first, you know, the mold is trying to grab their feet and keep them on board. Once they get over to the boat, they have to wait for the other boat to pick them up. Once they get in that boat, they got to make their way out of this spiderwebby scum. And then even when they do get free, a storm is coming in.
Yeah.
It's one obstacle after another.
But they make it back to the ship, and they have some time to get ready before the storm hits them. But it's hard and it's powerful. And the following morning, he's able to properly check the second mate's feet. And he says the soles of them had the appearance of having been partially digested.
Oh, God. What does that look like?
I guess really bad acid burns, I suppose.
Yeah.
That guy must have suffered horrible pain.
Now, concluded the doctor, that is what I call a case in point. If we could know exactly what the old vessel had originally been loaded with and the juxtaposition of the various articles of her cargo, plus the heat and time she had endured, plus one or two other only guessable quantities, we should have solved the chemistry of the life force, gentlemen. Not necessarily the origin, mind you, but at least we should have taken a big step on the way. I've often regretted that, Gale, you know. It was a most amazing discovery. But at the same time, I had nothing but thankfulness to be rid of it. A most amazing chance. I often think of the way the monster woke out of its torpor, and that scum, the dead pigs caught in it. I fancy that was a grim kind of net, gentlemen. It caught many things, it...
The old doctor sighed and nodded. He began to fill his pipe again.
I suppose, he ended, looking round at us gravely, I suppose we humans are an ungrateful lot of beggars at the best. But what a chance. What a chance, eh?
So that's the end of the story. The doctor's disappointed that the storm washed the derelict away so they couldn't ever really figure out what the origins of that thing was.
How would they have figured anything out? I don't.
It's an interesting theory. He thinks that maybe it was something on board the ship. If they could know what was on there and look at the different articles that were in the cargo, he could figure out what was the, you know, was there some kind of chemical reaction in their cargo that caused this creature to grow?
But like, it was just completely full of mold. Like the whole thing was.
Yeah.
What was he going to do? It's preposterous, but.
Well, I think, you know, it is it's this life form they discovered and he wants to know what its origins are. That's all. But too scary to mess with, you know?
I mean, of course he wants to know because you want to make sure nothing like that happens again. But I don't know, you know, what living in the late 1800s, what kind of information they would be able to get. They can't really take samples of it or anything. And who knows what's like on their boots and their clothes and if it's going to spread onto their other things. Speaking of which, this story, the one that I mentioned at the top, which was also another WHH story, was The Voice in the Night.
Yeah, this was about halfway through. I started realizing that was the story. I didn't remember the title of it, but I thought, isn't this the old man had the mold growing on him? And
I thought maybe that's where this was going to go, is this mold would have got on their clothes and there'd be some kind of other story more about how the mold spread and they had to burn all their stuff and the ship was destroyed. But it didn't go there. This story was published in 1912, and The Voice of the Night came out years earlier, in 1907.
This feels like it might actually be a sequel, maybe, to A Voice in the Night.
Though. It could be.
Because that old man, he rode up to the ship, but he didn't want them to see him or touch him.
Yeah.
But they threw him some supplies and helped him out, and he told them the story. But maybe he did infect the boat. Maybe the ship he rode up to is this derelict. You know what I mean?
Could be. It's been a while since I've read that story, but maybe there is a connection. I looked it up, but there wasn't anything about the two stories, anybody comparing them online, at least that I could find.
Yeah.
But it's just a really creepy, good, weird tale. I was really, really pleased with it.
I agree. I think that the creature's unique and horrifying, and it gave me the exact same disgusting feelings that I got from Voice in the Night. Really cinematic, really a fun adventure story. Good escape. I liked it.
We got a recommendation for a story that I was surprised about. It's called The Testament of Magdalen Blair by Aleister Crowley. I feel like I'm kind of a chump about this because I didn't know Aleister Crowley wrote fiction.
I was aware that he wrote some fiction, but I never read it. I have to admit, I just assumed it would be bad.
Yeah.
That's really my motivation for that. I'm not a huge Crowley fan. Sorry if I offend anybody. But,
yeah.
But, you know, I could be completely wrong. I did meet a guy about 10 years ago who was a huge Crowley fan. He loved his fiction and said I was an idiot for not having read it. So We're going to read the Testament of Magdalene Blair next week, and let's find out who's the idiot, me or Crowley. Actually, Who's the Idiot is a game we play every week here on the HBO Craft Literary Podcast. But next week, we'll include the author in it.
I want to thank our reader.
Jeff C. Carter, thank you once again for bringing it home. And if you want to check out Jeff's fiction, you can go to Great Jones Street, where he's got some pieces of his fiction. We will link out in the show notes. Thanks, Jeff, once again, for reading for us.
And if you want to hear some Lovecraftian comedy drama play thing, go check out Quiet and Bold. It's awesome.
Who doesn't want to hear some Lovecraftian comedy thing? When you say thing, it might be a life form.
And with that, I'm Chris Lackey.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
HPPodcraft.com.